I go walking up the hill and I get up there and I knock on the door. I'm like, sir, hey, how are you? I'm a high school football coach from Northeast Alabama. We came over here to duck hunt and we decided we'd take a swim and we've sunk our boat down here in your backyard. I said, I'm trying to make a joke out of it, you know, trying to be nice to the guy. And, you know, he wouldn't have been any madder if he'd have come home and I had his wife grabbed up slapping her. I mean, he was mad. He's like, well, how long y'all planning on staying? And I said, well, now let's unzip those waders and let water roll out on his deck, you know. And I said, Not a long time. I said, we about got our belly full. I said, as soon as we get this boat on the trailer, I said, we'll be in and out of your hair.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Hayden, Alabama Podcast. I'm Phillip.
I'm Shane.
I'm the square grouper guy.
Corey Gray, Woody Waterfowl.
So we're here live. Well, not live. Sorry. Edited in Atlanta, downtown at the Battery, right here by the Atlanta Braves Stadium in the Sitka store.
I mean, we are live.
Right now we are. Yeah. When these people watch it, they won't be, that's for sure. So we're going to have a storytelling down here. But first, before we get there, let me tell you why we're here. So, Skylar, let everybody know why we're in Atlanta today.
I'm Skylar Ray, and along with the square grouper guy, I guess I'm a avid duck hunter. And we are doing a podcast today to advertise this all-inclusive duck hunt with country music superstar Sam Hunt. We're here at the Battery. They're nice enough to host us up here today, and you know, this is like redneck heaven up here, so we're extremely excited to be here.
This is what we know about Sitka. Not only are you a good hunter, you also make a lot of money.
Well, if you ever get tired of being wet, cold, and miserable, just wear Sitka.
That's the truth. It does work.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Yeah. I mean, it's like boiled ham. It's ready all the time.
People that make fun of it, they don't have it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. Once you get it, it's over.
It's over with. So, I went to North Dakota with Caleb Horton and them, and they had placed money. They said, I know one person that will not be wearing Sitka when they get up here, and that's Shane Thomas. Well, I strolled out the first day. I had on my Sitka, my coveralls, my jacket, and he said, man, I lost money on you, son. What are you doing? I said, you don't come to North Dakota and wear the Walls coveralls from Walmart. It don't work that way.
I'm a huge Lonesome Dove fan. The movie Lonesome Dove with Robert Duvall in it. And, you know, I tell everybody it's the most quotable movie ever. And Captain Call pitches Newt that pistol and says, here, son, it's better to have that and not need it than to need it and not have it. And that's the way I feel about Sitka. It's better to have it, not need it, than to need it and not have it.
You won't buy another pair of waders if you get in a Sitka pair of waders.
Lord, no. I'd play pickup basketball or field ground balls. I mean, I'd be okay if it was real cold, if my quarterback on that I coach in Collinsville, I'd be okay if he just played in it. And all jokes aside, I joke about that, but we were playing in a big game this year, and it was raining, and I didn't want to have to worry about my call sheet getting wet, and I didn't want to worry about being miserable and wet and cold. So I just wore my Sitka Delta wading jacket and my field bibs and my rubber boots on the sideline, and everybody's like, Coach, what are you doing? I was like,
staying warm.
Y'all be wet as you want to. Yeah. I'm not gonna be dry. I'm not.
Hey, there's a reason I started buying all solids, color solids. I don't buy camo anymore because I wear them everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. You
know? I wear them with everything. I can mix match them because they're all solids.
I was back there on the wall admiring that duck brown. I said, man, I like that pair of waders.
Look, they got a new color out called Dirt. And
hey, that's my favorite color.
The kids I coach, they call that Drip.
It's Drip.
The Dirty Drip. Well, real quick, so that's why we're here today. But let me introduce Corey. So, Corey, you're with Woody Waterfowl.
Yes, sir.
Tell us a little bit about that, and then Skylar Ray's got a story.
Well, we started 3 years ago. We call ourselves the Woody Boys. What was raised wood duck hunting in South Alabama. And so it just kind of stuck. And then when I had boys of my own, you know, they considered themselves the Woody Boys. So I was like, why not have a brand, you know? Yeah. So I started Woody Waterfowl, and so we go, the places I've been through that, you know, brand is worth it, you know, just the connections I've made and the people I've met has been, you know, it's been incredible.
And you're on Instagram and TikTok, right?
Yes, sir.
What is the handle they can find you at?
Woody Waterfowl on TikTok and Instagram.
Same thing.
And Facebook. We're on all three. So, yeah, we, we just like to travel and shoot ducks.
Hey, so. I hear you. Hey, before we go any further, I told this story last time we were with you. I'm going to ask Corey, can you decoy a wood duck?
It is possible, but it takes patience.
And most of the time, you're only going to get them if they're coming there anyway.
Yeah,
right?
You can 100% decoy a wood duck if your decoy is where they want to be.
Exactly. If it's sitting where they want to land, then yes, you decoy it.
You can decoy a wood duck. That's what happened to me.
If I go wood duck hunting, most of the time I leave my wood duck decoys at the house.
Yeah, I hear you.
If I go wood duck hunting, I just bring an extra box of shells. Because I'm not a real good shot, but I'm a firm believer. You miss every opportunity you don't take, and I'm trying to empty it out. I'm dumping the clip on the smoke wagon
Skyler gets through wood duck hunting, and the trees are permanently cleared, like a level.
Hey, the hole gets bigger every time.
That's right.
Well, Skyler, tell us that story you promised me.
Well, you know, I've been on here a couple times, and because of the situation, you know, Burt Reynolds said that in the movie Smokey and the Bandit, he said, it depends on what part of the United States you're standing in is just how dumb you are. And I think, you know, you got to kind of be a chameleon and kind of blend into where you're at. And, you know, I grew up in Northeast Alabama, and we don't have a professional team in Alabama of any kind. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's, you know, rite of passage, I guess. You're kind of, you know, wields your right to be a Braves fan. So, you know, my dad had a good buddy named Danny LeCroy, and he owned a couple gas stations. So we come up here to a bunch of baseball games at Fulton County and Turner Field, and now over here at Truist. And you know, I was around when the Braves won it in '95, and then won it again a couple of years ago. And I just grew up a Braves fan, and. You know, my grandmother named her dog Chipper. I mean, it's just, we grew up, baseball is just what you do. You know, baseball was our babysitter in the summertime before Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and podcasts. I mean, we had, you know, somebody was Chipper Jones and somebody was Jeff Blauser or Terry Pendleton or John Smoltz or Greg Maddux or somebody. And, you know, I've had a bunch of at-bats and, in the swimming pool or in the backyard, at, you know, in Game 7 of the World Series. So, you know, once I went to college, I started out as a business major. And I found out real quick that I didn't want to wear a suit and tie to work every day. And, you know, I wanted to be around ball. So, upon graduating, I became the I became a football coach and a baseball coach at the high school where I went to high school. And, baseball is kind of just a pastime in between football seasons at this high school, and or at least it was when we went there. And there is some tradition, you know. We've won a couple state championships back in the 80s, but you know, when I was there, you know, most of the guys run track or you know, just didn't play. And I was always one of those guys that, you know, if so-and-so would have played and, you know, if this would have happened, you know, I think we could have been pretty good because, you know, growing up, you know, we were on some good baseball teams. So anyway, when I became the baseball coach at Cherokee County, I just wanted to change the culture and I'm very, very competitive. So anyway, we were a small school and, you know, we're playing in the county tournament. We hadn't won the county tournament at this time in, I think, 7, 8, 9 years. You know, we were not a good baseball program and a good baseball team. And it just wasn't a priority to a lot of people. But it was to me. And, again, you know, if we're playing Chinese checkers, I'd want to win. So we're in the county tournament. And I've got a group of young kids. I mean, when I say young, none of them had driver's license. Their moms still comb their hair and brush their teeth for them. I mean, they were tiny. And I mean, nobody owned a razor of any kind. Like,
No need in it.
Like, they're baby-faced little kids, you know. And the team we're playing in the finals, you know, they were a good program. They had a really good baseball coach, and we're in the county tournament finals. And it's a close game, and we rotate venues every year. So we're at Cedar Bluff, and they've got a great baseball coach and a great baseball program. And I just told my assistant coach, I said, look, you know, every time their coach says something, I'm going to say something louder and longer. Like, I'm not letting him take over. I mean, because he just took over. Like, the umpires were just in awe of him.
You made it your task.
Oh, yeah. And I told him, I said, look, there's a good chance you're going to get to finish this one. I said, you know, I'm going to get kicked out of here. And anyway, I just didn't know. I knew we couldn't beat him and the kids and the road environment that we were in. And we had to have some kind of advantage. And I thought our advantage would be to take him verbally out of the game. So I just told our assistant coach, I said, look, you know, you're probably going to have to finish this. So anyway, you know, every time he would argue a call, I'd just go to the home plate and argue with him. You know, every time he said something to one of his players.
Get in there with you.
Yeah, I mean, whenever he'd say something to the umpire or one of his players, I'd just start talking to him. I just say something louder, and I don't have a problem talking or being heard.
No, not at all.
Anyway, we're in. I mean, it's getting crunch time.
Bottom of the sixth.
Yeah, it's like sixth inning. Mm-hmm. Like, and we're, you know, tied up, and we've kind of got a little momentum. I mean, we've got some, again, young kids, but, you know, they're good baseball players, and we had a chance. So, anyway, I had a kid up to bat, and there's a 2-1 count on the kid. And, again, between me and the other coach, we had the referee or the umpire so flustered, he didn't even know where he was at. And they had a 2-1 count on the kid, and their pitcher throws a ball – and it bounces in the dirt for ball three. And stay with me now. 2 + 1 = 3. Mm-hmm. 3 + 1 = 4. Mm-hmm. So now the kid's throwing 4 pitches, and it's 3-1 count. Their pitcher throws another ball to home plate. My batter swings with a 3-1 count. Foul tips, and the catcher catches it. Well, he just rings him up. Mm-mm. Whoa. Nope. I don't know all the rules, but I know that one.
I know that one.
And I was like, hey, man, whoa. You know, there's no way. And he's like, coach, you know, no, we're not going to talk about it. Okay, no problem. So I just get back in the box. My next batter gets up, you know, comes around, you know, they struck the kid out. And which is a crucial, I mean, we're at the top of our order, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's game changing. So the next batter comes up to the box, and I said, come on, bro, you better get in the box, swing a bat. You may not get but 2 strikes. Time. So, like, this umpire is built like a microwave. Like, he's this tall, is about half as wide as that table. Built just like a microwave. And he yells at me. He said, you, come here. So I, me? And he said, yeah, you, come here. So I go down there, and I said, can I help you? And he said, you need to stay in the box. I said, well, I was in the box. You told me to come down here. You want me in the box or you want me down here? And he said, you better get in that box. Okay, so I go and get back in the box, and he said, I'm serious, coach. I won't have a coach arguing balls and strikes with me. I said, well, you're in luck. I'm not arguing balls and strikes. I'm arguing your ability to count to 6. And he goes, I mean, his face gets blood red. And I mean, of course, everybody from Cedar Bluff is just, oh, throw him out. And then, you know, our kids, you know, anyway, our fans, you know, and their fans, it's clashing. So I go and get back in the box, and, you know, I thought, you know, we got to have a spark right here. We need a little extra. We've got to.
You're just the man.
Oh, and I'm the guy.
You're the fire starter.
He said, coach, I'm serious now. I'm serious. You get in that box, and you better not say another word. So I look down at my toes, and I look up at him. I look back down at my toes, and I look back up at him, and I just kind of smile, you know. That's word. He run me out of there. And anyway, we ended up winning that county tournament, and it was the first time we had won a county tournament at Cherokee County in forever. And that was such a fun group of kids to coach and be around. You know, and it's just, you know, it was just such a blessing, you know, that the good Lord let me be able to be their coach. And, my dad was my coach there in Cherokee County. And it was kind of, you know, a lot of people want to be different things when they grow up. And I just always wanted to be around ball. So, you know, being a dad now, I don't know. I can see it both ways. I'd hate to say I wouldn't get kicked out, but I know me.
Yeah. Yeah, you know when to not say word again.
Yeah, it's rough being competitive, I tell you.
I know not to cross that line now, because ultimately it cost me $300, but at the time I thought it was money well spent.
Oh, yeah, I know you did. Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not, but just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
Well, being in Atlanta, Scott and I was talking yesterday. I said, I've got one little story about Atlanta and a baseball game. When I was a kid, I grew up a Mets fan. I don't know why. I love the New York Mets. I had the figurines. I had a jacket, jersey, everything. Well, my mom, you know, wanted to give me a gift. And so she bought Mets versus Braves tickets because that's the closest game you could possibly go to. So we came over to the old stadium. This is probably circa 1990. And we go over to the stadium. The Mets win. We have a big day, me and a little buddy. And at that time, my mom drove a 1988 Nissan Maxima.
Oh, man, y'all were high class.
Oh, man, it was so nice. Well, we had a great day until we started coming back home. So it was an afternoon game. It's dark when we're coming back. And all of a sudden, on 20, headed back towards Birmingham, it's nothing but brake lights for as far as you can see. I'm thinking, was there a wreck up here? Whatever. What mom didn't figure in was Talladega weekend.
Oh yeah. Man.
So we came in perfectly when all the Talladega traffic was let out. Well, I noticed that that my mom's demeanor changed. Mm-hmm. When we got into that traffic, and I didn't know why, I just thought it was because it was going to take longer.
Nobody likes a traffic jam.
She knew why,
but it was different. And like mom's demeanor was different. She kept looking back at me and my little buddy who was in the back seat. You know, just.
And how old were you guys?
Oh, we were single digits.
Oh yeah,
we're 9, 10 years old.
How you remember that?
Well, I remember it vividly because of what I'm fixing to tell you. So we're sitting there, and all of a sudden, I started noticing that it was like we had entered Sodom and Gomorrah. Around us, everybody in these cars were acting very different than anybody that I've ever been around.
More different than you were.
Much different than me, much different than my parents, much different than any family gathering or any event that I'd ever been to. And they're loud. They're you know, they don't have any clothes on or whatever. And my mom is sweating. And she's like, boys, I need y'all to sit there, and I need y'all just to keep looking forward. Just keep looking forward. We're going to get out of this here in just a minute. You know, the hooping and the hollering and all the things, because traffic is literally stopped on the interstate. Well, my curiosity, as it always does, gets the best of me. I'm thinking, what does mom not want me to look at? Well, she says, boys, look down. Look in the floorboard. Look in the floorboard right now. And I'm thinking,
not looking down.
Well, I looked down for just a second, and I noticed the car moves up, and we're passing by a yellow school bus. But this school bus is not in. It's not actively for a school anymore. I mean, somebody has purchased this bus, you know, personal use. And we get by the door, the big, long door that opens up with a hand that you get on and off, all the students do. Here stands Bubba Wilson. I don't know his name. No shirt on. Cut off blue jean shorts. But what was odd about Bubba standing in that doorway is that Bubba, I guess, had driven as far as he could before he had to go. So Bubba is just going.
Relieving himself.
Right there as we're slowly driving by. And, of course, I'm not looking at the floorboard. I'm like, oh my goodness, what in the world? I said, look at this. This guy's using the bathroom right here on the interstate, you know. And I thought, and my mom is just turning purple, red, yellow, you know, just trying to cover our eyes or whatever.
Don't look, Margaret!
She couldn't get out of that traffic jam fast enough. It was just so awkward. But we talked about it, and we get, you know, how little boys are. We giggled, we laughed about that, but I'll never forget it. I hadn't thought about
that. That sounds like
a Ray Stevens song. Oh, yeah.
Hopefully,
they didn't try it after that on their school bus.
I wouldn't have got on that school bus.
I'm going to tell one on Skyler. I ain't told this. I don't think I've ever told it on. I don't think I've ever even acknowledged it to Skyler. So, you're going to get
You're going to get he may or may not even Scott. No, this was going to be good.
Is it true?
This is a true story about Skyler.
About me?
Yes.
Me?
Yes.
You know, it's typical me.
You want me to come down there? I'm arguing your ability to tell a story. I don't know about where this is going to go.
Well, you just get ready. This is a good one.
I've never seen Skyler nervous. He's not right now.
He's sweating. You know, the thing about hanging out with people like you guys, y'all's intelligence level's a lot higher than mine.
No, I forget
stuff that y'all remember. Yeah.
That's a lie.
I don't know.
Well,
do I have plausible deniability at least?
There is zero plausible deniability. This is 100% Skyler Ray.
Oh, Lord.
If you don't know, if you've not noticed, Skyler is a storyteller.
Detail by detail,
word by word, line by line, tells it. And he also does his best to get the person listening to the story to enjoy the story. So, as it were,
all this is true.
So far, this is
so far.
As it were, I had my wife had never met Skyler, and I had prepped my wife. Okay,
you prepped me.
I prepped Philip. Like,
I
don't
think I needed prepping.
Skyler, great guy, wonderful guy. When you get to listen to Skyler, though, you just gotta use your sifter sometime. You know, you just listen to Skyler. He's going to make you laugh. He's going to make you enjoy your time. But use your sifter from time to time, right? So I told my wife, I said, Skyler will be there. She's heard all about Skyler, knows all about Skyler. Well, so as it was, we were at the Dove Shoot. And again, as we do, we stand around and we'll tell stories, right? Well, we were... Skyler, myself, and probably six or seven other men were around a tailgate, around a truck bed. And we were all leaned up on the truck bed, and we were listening to Skyler. And he was laying it on thicker and heavier as he went. And he was telling a good one. I mean, a good one that a bunch of 25, 26-year-old men is going to listen to. We're going to listen to what Skyler's got to say. Unbeknownst to Skyler, my wife had slipped around out of the door, not intentionally, just coming to see what we were doing, and had propped up right next to him to the right. Now, Skyler did not see my wife. She was right here to the right. Mm. Skyler's attention was to the left, and he had not let off of anything. He was still telling it. Just like it was, wasn't it, Skyler? Do you remember this? Now?
It sounds true. Like it went from probably validated to it sounds true.
So
I mean, look, there's no. I mean, true is true.
So, the rest of the men around the truck bed saw my wife approach Skyler on the right side. I saw my wife, and it was one of those. I just hung my head, just kind of like. She's not prepared for this, I don't think. Well, he gets to finish his story, and then he looks to the right and recognizes who has now approached him to the right.
The new audience member.
Up until that point, I had never seen Skyler shy away, get slightly embarrassed or anything. But at that time, he recognized my wife being right there to the right. He immediately... lost all words. No more words. The end of the story was done. And at that time, everybody else, of course, had a big laugh. You know, big laugh. It was funny and all. But I'll tell you what Skyler did. But at the end of the day, I think he felt so bad that he had told that story to my wife that he had come to me at the end of the day. He said, Shane, he said, you shoot 20-gauge, don't you? I said, yeah. He said, man, I got a whole bag of 20-gauge shells.
Hey, peace offering.
I'm not even using it. I don't want to ever shoot them.
I don't even like 20-gauges.
Ever.
And I said, I absolutely do. Thank you, sir. And to this day, I still have that bag of 20-gauge shells and shoot out of them quite regularly.
I'm shooting 20-gauge now. Can I have that?
He doesn't feel bad anymore.
I'll take them.
Oh, I won't ever forget that. Oh, so funny.
You know, the truth is sometimes embarrassing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my wife, I mean, she's better looking than me. You know, I have to live with that. I mean, it's true. It's embarrassing. You know, I hate it for her that I'm not better looking, but you know, it just shows that I have better decision making skills.
That's,
I
mean, all. That's all it comes down to. Exactly. What perspective?
You know, which set of goggles you looking through? Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, I don't know. I guess I'm from the old school. You know, you don't really want to embarrass, you know, women that's and children.
Right.
So
that's right. It would have been a good thing for us to have acknowledged and said, "Hey, Skylar, my wife's here." But no, we were like, "No, we're going to let those arrive."
As good as Skylar is at painting the initial picture, I'm sure every person at that tailgate knew where he was probably going to go.
We knew where we were going. Yeah, absolutely knew where he was going.
So y'all are at fault a little bit. Well, just to be honest.
And Shane's wife is precious. I mean, anybody that's been around her, I mean, she's precious. I mean, I just, you know, again, it depends on, you know, what set of glasses you're looking at it from. I mean, I guess you would say kind of baptized her into the real world.
Oh, I'm sure you did.
It's probably her first. I mean, it's her first experience in Cherokee County. I mean,
yeah, if you get on in there.
She's been back since. It didn't scar her too bad. I mean,
you know, she's been back to witness. That's what she's been back to do, to share the gospel a little bit.
Hey, look, y'all got to come to the chitlin' cooking.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, hey, you told me, but I know you got to get up and kind of work the event. You said something that you had told me you had not told the story of sinking something.
Well, you know, speaking of the chitlin' cooking, we were at
the original story.
You know, me and Philip was talking about this event here in Atlanta today, and you know, when y'all asked me, you know, being from center and not being a real tech savvy guy, you know, you said, "Hey, man, you want to get on this podcast with us?" And I mean, I thought y'all were talking about some kind of casting net or fishing rod. I didn't know what a podcast was. I mean, I had no idea.
We're casting together a pod of us.
I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to have to work. You know, I come here to eat, and I'm fixing to have to work. Never know. Let's try it. So anyway, that's when the, you know, we told the square grouper and the Great Lakes layout story, you know, when we sunk the layout boat that my stepdad had built. Well, this is, you know, we're professionals. You know,
you're professional at something.
Yeah, I mean,
no doubt about it.
You gotta be. I mean, we go hard in the paint. You know what I mean? And let's fast forward. You know, through the last. I mean, they check out the stories. You know, we slept in the Roach Motel or whatever. So we finally make it to our destination, and we're in Washington State. So it's like, again, just like, we're in awe because Washington State is beautiful. And if you hadn't been, I highly recommend going. It's a beautiful state. And the next stop on the other side of Washington is Japan. So there's nothing.
Nothing in between
there's
there.
Nothing to break the waves up. And up on the East Coast, you have to worry about the tide level going up and down. On the West Coast, it's nothing but just wind and waves. Not a lot of, you know, freezing cold temperatures like the East Coast. I mean, it gets cold, but it's not, the weather is nothing to mess with. Oh, we're good. So they're giving a small craft advisory. Well, we're in a
large craft.
We're in a larger than small. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in a medium.
What do you mean a small craft?
You're Skylar Rowe.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't
larger
come here. We didn't come here to, you know, sleep in. I mean, you can't kill them on the couch. So we're going. So we go to the boat ramp at daylight, you know, and we put the boat in, and I'm like, man, this ain't nothing. This ain't no big deal, you know. I mean, this is terrible. But I mean, it's not just like unbearable. I mean, it's bad. It's terrible, but it's not like, you know, life threatening. So we put the boat in, and we're all in there, you know, and again, we've got our Sitka stuff on, you know.
And nice and warm.
Yeah, we're ready to go. And we pull out, and we're going, you know, just kind of, it's right at daylight.
What kind of boat is this?
It's a 21-foot Easy 200 Sea Arc. I mean, it's nice. It's got benches down the side, you know, and it's got a, you know, nice motor. And granted, you know, people around here, when I got it, they were like, "Where are you going to hide that big boat at?" Out there, people are like, "Man, I wouldn't go out there in that little boat." And I'm like, "Oh, we're fine." You know, and again, we'd been in the Gulf of Mexico and every major body of water in America in it. So we're in Washington State. So we get out there and we come around the point, and it changes drastically once the wind can, you know, hit the water from coming off this big cliff. And I realized quick, ain't no going back that way. So I tell my buddies, I said, look, hey, we're not duck hunting anymore. We're going to find another boat ramp. So Ryan Long, we're not duck hunting anymore. No, I said, we're now on a boat ride.
We're in life preservation.
So, Ryan Law, I mean, he doesn't get upset about anything, like never worries about anything. So he says, hold on, I'll just go get us a life jacket. And I'm starting to get worried. Like water is like splashing over the front. I said, man, find us a boat ramp. So he's like, well, there's one right there. I said, we can't turn around in this. This is bad. He said, well, hold on. He's thumbs through his phone. He said, hey, there's one, like, says it's like 3 miles right up here. Okay, so we're up and down, up and down, and we finally see the boat ramp. And we realize, like, we're riding the waves and pulling back, riding the waves and pulling back. And we realize, hey, we're going to have to turn at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So when we turn to go towards the boat ramp, the front of that boat just plows into the water. I mean, when I say plow, I mean it goes under. Like, it's like coming out of a haulover, which I have been out of haulover in a duck boat, and I'm telling you, this is worse than that. It plows in there, and water is up to my shins.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm like, hey, buckle it up. I felt like Jack off Titanic, you know, like looking for my wooden door. So anyway, I'm giving it gas, and the front of the boat won't even, like, it's just barely, like, there's that much. I mean, and it's just filling up. And finally, the whole motor is like literally up under and the point of the boat. And I'm like, oh, we're going
down.
I don't
down,
know if we're
going
to die, but we're going down. The boat's going down and we're swimming. Like, we're fixing to get to swim. So anyway.
We're fixing to test out this sitka gear.
Anybody else would be.
Yeah, I'm just hoping sitka gear will float.
Skylar's probably, I don't think it's that just waterproof.
Like, it's all right.
So we come in and I mean, finally the motor goes yunk and shuts off. Like, it locks her down tight as a jug. And I'm like, jump. So they all jump. And the captain's going down with the ship. Once they're off, I jump. So we get out. And luckily, like, the front of the boat is like, I don't know, probably 20 or 30 yards offshore. And it, you know, it's like when the waves are coming out, we're like kind of getting knocked back. And when the waves are coming in, they're breaking over our head. And we're trying everything we can do to stand up. So Sitka is waterproof, but it ain't a wetsuit.
Mm-mm.
So we get on the bank. And again, the waterproof pocket on my jacket luckily kept my phone, like, working. So we call our buddy who had slept in, was like, who had enough sense not to go. I was like, hey, man, we've sunk the boat. We're right here, we're sending you a pin, come get us. So we get down there, and we're trying to use, you know, all of our thinking power, and which is not a lot, but
limited.
We're, you know,
cumulatively though,
we do have, you know, redneck ingenuity, you know, I mean, we can come up with some ideas. So anyway,
Give us some hats while you finish your story.
We come up with this grand scheme on the way for Richard to bring the truck down to us. And we're standing on the beach, and here comes a lady with these two big, white, fluffy dogs. And again, you know, if you've ever been duck hunting, like, you've got a bunch of sometimes unnecessary stuff with you. And sometimes it turns out to be kind of handy. Well, a lot of that stuff had floated out of the boat and out onto the beach. Well, the lady comes walking by and with these little fluffy dogs, and we're standing there, and I can look in my waders and I can see the water in my waders.
Oh no.
And it's 30 degrees, 25 degrees, and I can see the water in my waders. And she says, excuse me, guys, are you guys hunting? I said, no, ma'am, we're trying to teach that boat how to swim. And she just looked at me, and she said, well, is this y'all's stuff floating on the beach? And I said, no, ma'am, that's the other people that sunk their boat. They pumped all the water out, and they're headed back home. And I said, look, I'm sorry, ma'am. I shouldn't have been rude. Yes, that's our stuff. We'll get up every bit of it. I said, we've had a rough day. And she says, looks like it. And she just kept walking her dog. So anyway, we go
looks
down.
Looks like you have.
And we're thinking this is a public boat ramp. Well, it's not. It's in like a really ritzy neighborhood. And we're in somebody's backyard on their private boat ramp.
Oh, no.
And I'm dreading knocking on this door, but it had to be done. You know, we've got to get down that boat ramp. So Ryan said, you want me to go talk to that guy? And I said, no. I'll talk to him. I said, I'll handle it.
He's the spokesman.
He said, well, I can talk to him. So anyway, I go walking up the hill and I get up there and I knock on the door. I'm like, sir, hey, how are you? I'm a high school football coach from Northeast Alabama. We came over here to duck hunt and we decided we'd take a swim and we've sunk our boat down here in your backyard. I said, I'm trying to make a joke out of it, you know, trying to be nice to the guy. And, you know, he wouldn't have been any madder if he'd have come home and I had his wife grabbed up slapping her. I mean, he was mad. He's like, well, how long y'all planning on staying? And I said, well, now let's unzip those waders and let water roll out on his deck, you know. And I said, Not a long time. I said, we about got our belly full. I said, as soon as we get this boat on the trailer, I said, we'll be in and out of your hair. And he said, well, y'all ain't using my boat ramp. Well, Ryan hears him. And Ryan said, hey, buddy, hold on just a second. He comes walking up there. He said, hey, you got two options. You can call the cops and tell them to come over here and arrest us. And we'll jerk that gate up with the winch on this F-250 and we'll be getting that boat out when they get here. Or you can open that gate and we'll get that boat and you'll never see us again. Yeah. He said, we didn't want to be here and we're trying to leave. He said, I'll open it in a minute. And he goes walking outside. And I said, I'm sorry about that. And he said, you know, I am too. He said, it ain't every day that you see somebody in the middle of winter going swimming in your backyard. I said, well, buddy, we started out hunting and we ended up swimming. I said, but, you know, he was right. You'll never see us again. He said, you boys just take your time. He ended up being a pretty nice guy, but it was just, you know, it was mind boggling, you know, because everybody's 10 feet tall and bulletproof till you're not.
Till you're not.
So hear that F-250 rattling out there with that winch going, yeah. To your gate, things change a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that'll change your way.
Because one look at y'all, I'm convinced that what you said was true.
Oh, yeah. We're I'm not.
I don't doubt it one bit.
I may go to jail for trespassing in that guy's yard on accident. I sunk the boat. And we caught the truck on fire and had to put, you know, because we run the winch so long, it caught the battery cables on fire and smoke was boiling out from underneath the hood of a brand new F-250. And the folks at Landers McLarty Ford were awesome about it. So, if you have an issue, I suggest checking out Landers McLarty Ford. They're one of our sponsors with TC Duck Club. I do business with people that take care of us.
There you go.
So, anyway, we caught the truck on fire, and we put it out with salt water, cranked right back up, and we drove it home. But, you know, the funniest part about the whole deal, my college roommate was an Alpha insurance adjuster, and he knew we were going on the trip. And we tried to get him and his wife to go with us. And, you know, of course, they had little kids and couldn't. But I called him from the beach. And he said, what have you tore up today? And I said, man, I'm telling you, you're not going to like this, but your boat's at the bottom of the ocean. He said, what do you mean? I said, we sunk the boat. He said, I ain't got no boat. And I said, Alpha does.
Yeah, Alpha's got a yours.
I said, it's ruined.
Yeah.
I said, Rhett, do I have to... I have to get this boat back on the trailer. And he said, well, yeah, you got to get it back. If you're planning on filing insurance, you can't just leave it in the ocean. I said, well, they filed an insurance claim on the Titanic. They ain't got it out of the ocean yet. I said, why can't I just leave it here? I said, I'm soaking wet. And he said, it don't work like that. I said, are you sure? And he said, yeah, if you're going to file an insurance claim, we got to have something to show for it. I said, I got a couple pictures. He said, it ain't going to work like
Not
that.
Not going to work that
So way. Anyway, that was our story. And the reason I asked is, I know I say this all the time, but, you know, I don't realize how small the world is. Somebody saw that I was advertising this particular event and this duck hunt with Sam Hunt. And somebody who had saw the Square Grouper deal asked me on TikTok if this story that I just told about sinking the boat was part of the Hayden, Alabama podcast. So, you know, again,
it is now.
It is now.
So
Mm-hmm. Scott, I tell you, buddy, you've been some places, done some things, boy. There ain't no doubt about it. I can't come close to that. You got anything? You got another story you want to tell with us?
My dad and his best friend, they've been best friends since high school. So they were hunting a separate place we were hunting with, about a mile away. So my dad's buddy calls me. He's like, Corey, you're going to have to come get me. I said, what's wrong? He said, your dang daddy ran me over in the boat. I'm soaking wet and I'm freezing. I said, Kevin, you want me to get, the wind had picked up. I mean, the Mississippi gets rough. It was 4 foot, swells. He said, yeah, you're going to have to come get me. He won't bring me back. They were griping back and forth with each other. That's how they've known each other since high school. That's how they do. But my dad apparently throttled down on it, didn't know he was in front of him, and ran over him with the pontoon and pushed him down under the water.
Golly.
So I went out, I put the boat in, and I got it in. I was like, oh my gosh, this ain't good. Like, I couldn't hardly get it off the trailer. Wind pushing me in the boat, the bank. So I finally got headed down the river. The whole time, boat's hitting waves, getting me soaking wet. The time I got to him, I was soaking wet. So I was like, you feel better now that I'm soaking wet? Mm-hmm. I'm your ride, and I'm soaking wet now. So you feel a little better? He was like, I'm just glad. Let's get out of here.
Just glad it. I was soaking wet.
I mean, it was a mile and a half, and it was rough.
So your dad really wouldn't get him, pick him up?
No, he just had eight other people out there, and that pontoon boat runs about 6 miles per hour. And he said, the time I get back on this thing, I'm going to be froze to death. So I have a Havoc with a Tohatsu 60 on it. So it'll run 40. So I went out there and got him and brought him back.
Wow.
But
incredible.
It was funny. They've known each other their whole life. So they they get into it all the time like swim. That. They're fine. And that's the way one of my buddies are. He actually lives in Forsyth, Georgia. And he was over here last night. We were telling stories, and me and him will get into it. I'll tell him, you should have been over there hiding from them ducks. Them ducks are flaring on you. We just bicker back and forth. You know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
Don't be shocked that people won't come get you now. Like, we drove with 1-2 Sneed over to Lake Erie, and we're hunting greater bluebills. And we had went to this one boat ramp the day before season came in, and we come back to the boat ramp, and we saw the game warden, and we're like, oh, man. Oh, God, everybody dreads to see green jeans. This guy was awesome. And we was like, hey, we're from Northeast Alabama. He said, I could tell by the way you talk, you're not from around here. He said, what are you guys trying to kill? And we told him we're trying to kill greater bluebills. And game warden just says, hey, you got Onyx? You got an iPhone? I said, yeah, I got an iPhone. He said, here, I'm going to drop you a pen. He just drops us a pen right where the ducks are. So anyway, make a long story short, we thanked him and told him how appreciative we were. And I said, hey, one more question. I said, we hadn't ate since we left Alabama and we're in Michigan. I said, where's the best steakhouse? He dropped us a pin to that too. So, I mean, the game warden put us on the ducks and put us on a steakhouse. I mean, it's the nicest game warden I've ever met.
You find some good ones there.
We get there hunting bluebills the next morning.
Every now and then.
And I trip and fall in. And when I fall in, I mean, I fall in like under, like it's one of those stumbles that takes 2 or 3 seconds to fall. And I mean, I hit ear first and I go down. And when I get back up, the algae on the rocks are slick. So I fall 2 or 3 more times. Like I am soaking wet. And I come back up and I said, man, whew. I said, I don't know if I can take this, Brian. He said, well, we're not going nowhere. And I said, dude, I'm telling you, I don't know. He said, look, you always talk about how tough you are. You're fixing to find out. And I said, you got to toughen up. So I was like, well, I'm not fixing to get trash talked by a guy that's built like my wife. So I'm going to sit here. So we start sitting there. And like, I've start, it's kind of like an ice bath. You get used to it. And my body temperature was warming up the water inside the waders. I thought, it ain't that bad. So it wasn't there after about 5 minutes, but when it got to about minute 20, son, I'm telling you, it like I got numb.
Hypothermia
and then
started
like, after about an hour, I started feeling like, man, I may be sick. And we were on them. Like we're on the X. Like we're right in the middle of the X. We're not on either end of the X. We're right in the middle of the X. They're lighting in our face. Like we're picking out which Drake bluebill, greater bluebill we want to shoot. Boom, we shoot them. crush them. And we're picking up our stuff and our decoys, and we're just throwing stuff in the boat. I was like, hey, man, that was awesome. We're high-fiving, you know, and I'm trying not really put on. Because, again, Brian's built like a middle school girl. I mean, he's tiny. So I'm not really wanting to be – me and my ego is not really wanting to be trashed out by somebody like that. And I'm not wanting to show any emotion. So I was like, hey, man, come on, we'll fix that up there before the wind ain't blowing, you know. And we get up there, and finally – we get back to the boat ramp, and Brian's like, hey, you know, let's wrap these cords up. Let's put the long line rope in the barrel. Let's do this. Let's do that. I said, Brian, normally, you know, you would be like, if we were both dogs, you would be the dog on the porch eating biscuits. I'd be the one standing at the gate wanting to bite people when they come in. I said, right now, I'm just trying to find a heater. I said, I don't care if somebody comes and steals these decoys. I don't care if they blow out of the truck. I said, I'm not doing anything else till I sit in front of that heater. And I'm telling you, that's the most miserably cold day of my entire life. But our buddy, Brian Snead, he looked at me dead serious. He said, you ain't going nowhere. And I'm like, well, man, I can't let Brian trash talk me. So
Brian is the world's worst about once he sets his mind to it, there's no changing that mind.
Not right? A lick.
Well, he and I, he won a little trip to New York City to watch the Jets and the Bills play. He called me, said, Shane, you want to go to New York? I said, man, I've never been. I'd like to go. He said, I've got an extra ticket. If you want to go, you can go with me. So that sounds great. He said, we'll go up a day early and we'll kind of sightsee since you've never been. I've been, or Brian's been, and he said, I've been, so we'll just kind of go around and hit all the sights. So, hey, that sounds fantastic. So we get there, and of course, like two Alabama boys, where I don't even have tennis shoes on. I got like some penny loafers of some sort. I don't even know why I wore those shoes, but I had them. And I should have put on tennis shoes, but I didn't. Well, Brian sets out to see New York City in a day. And when I say see New York City, I mean he's wanting to see the Statue of Liberty. He's wanting to see where the Twin Towers were. He's wanting to see what's the Madison Square Gardens. He's wanting to see Central Park. All of it.
Yeah, and he's probably got it, Kat. Like, knowing Brian, he's probably got it down to the second of how long.
Where we can stay, how long we can be there, and we got to go.
And in no part of that, like, Brian's those guys that he'll have, like, a granola bar and a bottle of water in a fanny pack and be like, hey, we ain't got time for pizza. We
got
to go.
Got to go. And so the other thing he doesn't have figured in is any mode of transportation. He's not paying for a cab or an Uber.
No, that would kill him. That would absolutely drive him.
Why would we do that when we have these perfectly two good feet to use, right? To walk the entirety of New York City.
Miles, yeah.
And if anybody's ever been, I know a lot of people have been. If you've never been to New York City, it's not center.
No, it's not Alabama. It's not, like, it's not America. Like, it is
New York.
Awesome.
It's like, huge.
It is awesome. Right? It is awesome.
So we set out on this task for Brian to finish, to show me New York City in a day. We're going. Well, it gets to be about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and we have not stopped for more than about 30 seconds to look at whatever it is that we're looking at. He says, you've got to go see the Brooklyn Bridge. And at this time, I'm wearing down a little bit, and I'm like, buddy, that's fine. I want to see the Brooklyn Bridge, but can we get a taxi there? Because according to what my phone says, that's a mile from here. No. We can walk. Okay, we'll walk. So we take off walking. Before we get to the Brooklyn Bridge, though, about 2/10 of a mile in, my right foot begins to ache worse than I've ever felt anything ache in my life. Mm. And by the time we reach the Brooklyn Bridge, I'm hobbling, like dragging my right foot. So he's looking at me. I'm looking at him. He's like, what are you doing? I said, Brian, I know you don't understand this because you don't feel what I feel right now, but my foot hurts worse than anything I've ever had hurt in my life. He said, you're just being a pansy. I said, no, you don't. I don't say things hurt. I don't normally acknowledge things hurt. This hurts tremendously, like painfully. man, we're almost there. Okay, we'll continue on, but you got to go at my pace. We go. So we get there. And if you've ever been to the Brooklyn Bridge, it's an incline to the top, and then it stops down. We get halfway up, and I look at Brian. He's probably 20 yards ahead. I yell at him, and there's people everywhere. I said, Brian. He turned around and looks at me. He's like, what? I said, I've seen the Brooklyn Bridge. He said, no, we got it. I said, no, I see the Brooklyn Bridge. Let's go back the other way. So he comes back to me and he said, man, what do you think? He said, I've got an idea. We're not far from Chinatown. You need a foot massage. I said, man, I don't know that foot massage is the best thing right now for the way this thing's feeling. I really don't. He said, no. It'll take care of everything. If you've never had a foot massage in Chinatown, that's what you need. Okay. You're the expert here, not me. I'm new. This is all new to me. So we go to Chinatown. I hobble to Chinatown. Mm-mm. I'm thinking we're going to get into this little area, and this small little petite Chinese woman is going to carefully massage our feet and get me back on the road to health. Maybe a little acupuncture. I don't know. We sit down there, and I've got a picture. I might even forward it to Philip. And we, of course, you don't go into like the shop. You go downstairs into the shop, basement. You know, the basement.
Yeah, the basement.
And I'm looking at Brian, and it's like this pink haze, you know.
It sound like a massage parlor, does it?
No. I've never been to a place like this. I don't know.
Wrong door.
I was beginning to question. What's the name of this place? So we sit down on this nice couch, and just as I suspected, this
was it
nice
crushed
little,
velvet by chance?
It was velvet.
Wow.
You had been a there? Cover. Had a cover.
I don't know.
It's
starting to sound familiar.
Had a cover on it. But at this point in time, I'm exhausted. My foot's aching. I really don't care as long as nobody's like approaching me in an inappropriate manner. Like, I'm okay. Like, just let me sit. So I sit down, and just as I suspected, small, petite Chinese woman comes and brings a foot bath soak. So I put my feet in the soak, and I'm sitting there, and I'm enjoying. I'm almost falling asleep. Well, she says something to someone in the back, and she said, "Hey, we'll be right back." Okay, I said, "Okay, that sounds good." And I looked at Brian's like, "What's next?" He's like, "I guess we're going to get our massage next." I was like, "I hope we do, because this is getting a little bit uncomfortable." Out comes the lady again. She sits down at Brian's feet. And I look to the left, and the biggest, burliest, gnarliest Chinese man brings his foot pan to me and sits in front of me. And Brian Sneed looks just like you right now, grinning like a possum eating. I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And I look at him, and he looks at me just grinning, and I said, "This ain't happening." He said, "Oh, yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah."
And I'm going to video every bit of it. I said, "I hate your guts." That man tried to push my feet into my brain for 30 minutes, and it made my foot worse. So Brian, with his little petite lady sitting there, looks at me. He said, "Does this hurt?" Look at me, ask me. I said, "Brian, I'm going to punch you in the face."
I'm doing this now because you're fixing to bleed.
You're going to bleed after this. Yeah. I said, "What do you mean, does this hurt?" He said, "She's hurting my foot." And I said, I can't tell you how mad I am at you right now. Does this hurt? Look at what this man's doing to my foot.
I feel like we've got about the same luck, because when me and my wife went on our honeymoon to Jamaica, I had like a 6'5 lady at the Sandals Resort, and I'm pretty sure like she was some kind of Olympic athlete.
Yeah.
Like she's just there for like a hobby or a joke.
She threw the shot put, actually.
Like I'm telling you, I've played with offensive linemen, like
not as strong as her. Yeah.
Like she meant it. Like when she grabbed you, like it was like vice grips. Yes. Like, oh. Is this okay? Am I in the right place? Like, I mean, there's no doubt if a fight broke out, she'd wear me out.
It turns out, Skyler, though, I had a fractured right foot, like the
he
that,
can't fix that. No, you he can't massage it. That back.
No, he couldn't. You can't even massage that to feel good.
No. I don't know if he most certainly did not make it better. I don't know that he might have made it worse.
He turned a hairline fracture into a compound fracture is what he did.
Yeah.
Sure did.
Did you at least get a finish your story? I got questions. Go ahead. Finish your story.
No, that's it. The finish to the story is the next morning we had to fly out. Brian making fun of me the whole time. Guess what he's doing through the airport at Newark? Hobbling. He ends up stress fracturing his left side. I stress fracture my right. So I'm laughing at him. I'm like, Brian's your foot
hurt?
He
got one too?
He did, from as much walking as we did.
Well, let's go back to Decatur. We're going to tie it up real quick. I got one more about the – y'all got me thinking about the boat sinking. Well, I used to really love to fish, as in you couldn't tell me not to go fishing. Kind of like the advisory – tried to tell you not to get your boat out in the water.
Small craft.
Well, I was not used to fishing on the Tennessee River around Decatur, you know, Wheeler. But I'd always heard tell that do not go when the wind is blowing out of the west. Just due west. Just don't go because it makes the river stand up.
Oh, and they mean it.
Well, I was in a place in my life where you couldn't tell me not to go fishing, but they told me that, and I got a buddy of mine who was crazy enough to get in the boat with me. Now, this is a 16-foot Astroglass with a 100 old Johnson or something like that on it. It's all we could afford, but it was a good boat. Well, when we left, the wind was not blowing out of the west.
Is this for our listening audience and for me, is this like a bass boat type?
Yeah, 16-foot bass boat.
So, no, not a fishing ski with like...
Nope.
Just a bass boat.
Just a bass boat. It is fiberglass.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, 1980s.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Scottsdale era.
I wish I had a Scottsdale now.
Oh, yeah, me too.
A little square body. Well, anyway, we headed up towards the bridge, the 65 bridge that goes over the river. So we head up there to fish this little inlet cut that we like to fish up there. Well, we're up there, and all of a sudden, the wind starts blowing.
Oh.
And it starts blowing due out of the west. And I'm just noticing this just pushing us. And I told my buddy, I said, I think we probably do need to start getting back. And he said, I hope we're just not too late. I said, we're going to go. So I get it up on plane. And when we go under the bridge, those waves are just coming, just rolling right at you. And you can imagine. So, and they're spaced out just enough that the boat fits right in between them. You know, the boat's not long enough to cross one, cross another, and cross another. So I put it as hard as I could go. I said, if we're going to do it, let's just do it. I'm running wide open. And that boat is literally jumping one and just casing every single boat. And every time it hits, everything smash. Just boom, and all those rods and everything. So I said, all right, here's what we need to do. We need to slow it down. And so I slowed it down
a little bit.
And then the water started coming over the front of the boat. When we're slowing it down, I looked at him and I said, I don't know what to do. We don't have another gear. Like, it's either wide open. And I told him, I said, let's just go as fast as we can over here to the bank. And if it sinks, at least it'll be by the bank. So now we turn.
See, we're thinking on the same
way. Yeah, we're thinking the same way, because the middle of the Tennessee River is not where I want my boat. So we go over there, and it's just like boom, boom over. And we get over there, and then there's rocks. So now we're hitting rocks every time. Oh, so we reverse it back out. And I said, if God will help us get to the other side of that river, all that water outside the channel is 3 foot deep, every bit of it. And I said, and if the boat sinks, we're 3 feet deep and we can at least get it up. Well, lo and behold, the Lord provided, as Moses
parted
the Red Sea, and we made it over to the other side. But thank God, when we got to the other side, it was calm enough that I idled for I guess that's a mile. Just an idle all the way back to City Dock to get
along
the thing. How many times I fished on the Tennessee River when they said the wind was out of the west since that day?
Zero. Mm. No need.
Zero.
No, I mean, we have sketchy weather radios now. Like,
I didn't have.
That's what got us in trouble with the Coast Guard. I didn't have my dang weather radio.
That's right. That's right.
We were hunting in St. George Island last year on the coast. And man, we were out there, daylight, smooth as silk going out there. African wind picked up, dude. And I said, if we don't get off this water now, we're not getting off this water. So we start going down through there, and it's just bam.
Yeah, it's awful.
Bam. I said, get me off this water. I'm going home.
You don't pay attention.
I mean, that's 17-foot Havoc. But
it's not much better than 16 foot Astro Blast.
I mean, it ain't.
One foot.
I mean, I know, a little horsepower.
It ain't a 28 foot. Skyler's got a big old duck water.
And
he's got that large boat.
He's got a dang yacht boat.
We did, you know, you're talking about 16 and 17 foot. I bought a boat in the sand. My feet were in the sand. I looked up Jeff Coates, Pit Boss Waterfowl. He's like the goat of sea duck hunting. He's the greatest. He's the Michael Jordan of sea duck hunting. Jeff Coates is awesome. And he's a great human being. But I looked on his website to see what kind of boat he had. And I bought one in the sand. Like, I called them while we're waiting to get that boat on the trailer. Like, because I mean, it scared me bad. And I just thought, what if my young son had been in here? And we've been everywhere with my kids. I mean, we've been to the Bahamas, we've been to the Great Lakes, he's been to North Carolina and the Pamlico Sound, we've been to the Puget Sound. I mean, I just people don't understand like how scary something like that is. And we're all sitting here, you know, by the grace of God, you know, kind of joking about it. But if God wouldn't have been in that boat with us in Washington State, I'm telling you, me and Jack, we're watching Titanic from a, you know, from the upper room.
From the upper room.
Now, you're right. We don't appreciate wind until you're on the water. 100%. Like a tornado, obviously, that's a little bit different. But then I want to say one more thing before we finish. Shane and I experienced that even on a 30-foot deep sea boat. You remember that day?
Mm-hmm.
We got out there fishing on deep sea, and it got bad. And even the captain on the way back, he just told us, he said, boys, I don't know how long it's going to take us to get back, but this boat is going to break in half if I keep it on plane. And it was, it brought that whole, you know, the one where you fish out of the back. You know what I'm talking about. Where the captain sits way up top. And it even, I'll never forget how hard that boat was hitting those waves.
Smash.
It's a dangerous thing. But Skylar Ray, I appreciate you. Corey, appreciate you sitting down here with
y'all.
Us.
We appreciate y'all. And a huge shout out to the Battery. How awesome is this store?
Oh, it's awesome.
I mean, this store. The whole thing's top notch.
I mean, this is the coolest store ever. I mean, there's people constantly coming in and out of this place. It's in a great location.
Looking at us like, what are y'all doing?
Yeah, what are these guys doing?
Who are these guys? You know, I mean, it's unbelievable. The Battery itself is just an awesome place. And you know,
I think it's time to get some groceries.
I'm hungry as a hostage, son.
Yeah, I'm
hungry as a hostage.
That social across the street. That's right.
I'd drink a mule's ear full of something. I'm thirsty. I need some water.
I could eat the north end out of a southbound mule.
I knew something was coming. I just didn't know which one it was. Well, that's going to do it for the Hey Now Bound podcast in Atlanta, Georgia today. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Corey.
And I'm the Square Grouper, guys.
We'll see you next week.